Today, we want to look, now that the signing deadline is over, at what teams got the most value in their 2025 MLB drafts. There's a piece at Baseball America Carlos wrote. Carlos has been covering the 2025 draft for over a year now. Forever. It's now time to put it in bed, move along. Carlos, great to see you. And let's just jump straight into it, which is, what are a couple of teams that, and you can explain what we mean by value, but what are a couple teams that stand out as getting great value in their 2025 draft?
Yeah, so this is an exercise we've done for a few years now, trying to just like put some more context around the draft. I think the signing deadline passing allows us to really look at the class and see how teams valued players in a way that the actual pick order might not. And so for this exercise, I really wanted to see, like, okay, if the BA board, we spent a lot of time making the BA 500 list in our draft reporting, if the BA board is analyzing all of these teams' drafts and all of these picks, what are the picks and what are the teams, the overall draft classes that the BA board really likes, and what are the classes and picks that maybe the BA board is a little bit more skeptical of? So what we've done is we've basically taken the slot values for all of the 315 picks that come with slot values. We've layered those onto the top 315 players in the class to give a sort of quasi BA 500 value. I don't think this is perfect because the way that talent is distributed in any given draft class is not always in the same sort of ascending order that the slot values are determined. I also think, too, if you just look at the top three players, those all come with bonuses that are bigger than any bonus that was handed out this year. So I think at the very top, you maybe had to discount just how valuable those players are relative to what the industry thinks. So there are some nuances here, but essentially we're just trying to put monetary values on how the BA board views these. We sum it all up. We kind of do this for the entire draft. And then we get at the end kind of a total BA value board. And you can also plug this in with each team's individual bonus pool and subtract those numbers to get like, okay, which are the teams that did much better than we expected based on our values and based on their bonus pools, and which maybe did not quite as good as we would have expected. So that's kind of what the process is. Hopefully that's clear. The team at the very top in terms of coming away from this draft with the most BA value is probably not surprising. It's the Baltimore Orioles. They had the most pick capital in the class. We wrote about why that was a reason why they were the most fascinating team in this draft ahead of it. And they had the biggest bonus pool at $19 million. In terms of total BA value, we have them coming away with almost $22 million in BA value. And part of that is just because they had so many picks. But we also see them as having really great value. They took players who are ranked higher on our board than where the Orioles got them. And then also, we think a lot of their actual signing bonuses they handed out to these players were good value as well. So the Orioles lead every team, and it's a fairly significant gap here. And we can kind of head in any direction you want after that. Any questions you have, right? Any other teams you want
to
hit on?
That's the most value. Mm-hmm. But again, that's kind of largely dependent on the fact that we think that they took players who are, you know, higher rated on our board that got them at, you know, at the price they got them and all that. But as you said, like, they started with a $19 million bonus pool. Mm-hmm. So they had a larger pool of money to start with. A team that jumps out to me on this is the Athletics, mm-hmm. because if you look at the value they got compared to the bonus pool, they had a $10.5 million and a little bit more than that bonus pool. And your calculations are that they got $14.5 million of BA value, to mm-hmm. use that term, out of it. That really does jump out to me. Like, what was some of the picks that really kind of stood out for the A's?
Yeah, so their difference in total BA value versus their actual bonus pool was just under $4 million. That was the most. So basically, if you want to think of that as like teams who spent the most efficiently, that positive value basically says that the BA board views this draft as kind of the most savvy. We like their picks most if you're just looking at BA value. I think if you look at their first three picks, really, they're all strong value plays. Jamie Arnold at pick over 11, Devin Taylor in the second round at pick 48, and then Gavin Turley, their fourth round pick at 110. All of these are players who we had ranked higher on our board. They were 6th, 34th, and 66th overall, respectively. And I think what you'll see here, the teams that the BA board really likes, the teams on the extremes are generally teams that in the first five rounds took players at a much better or worse spot on our draft rankings than where they were actually selected and typically where they were paid. The money is not always one-to-one with where they were selected. So we see the Jamie Arnold pick as having in excess of $1.5 million in value. His actual signing bonus was just under $6 million based on the BA 500. We viewed Jamie Arnold as a $7.5 million value in this class. Devin Taylor is $320,000 in excess value. Gavin Turley, $700,000 in excess value. So those are kind of doing the heavy lifting for the A's here and make them kind of the most efficient in the class for us.
To go back to Baltimore for a minute, since they had the largest value, what are some of the picks that really jumped out for Baltimore, for the Orioles?
Yeah, again, I think it's like basically all of their top picks. I'm pulling up their board now to go through them. But Ike Irish,
are always one that jumps out. That was almost $2 million of value in how we see it.
Yeah, that is their most like their most positive value pick. Fahiva Aloy, he was our 16th ranked player in the class with a BA value of nearly $5 million. The Orioles took him with the 31st overall pick and signed him to just a $3 million bonus. So it's almost $2 million in surplus value there. Ike Irish, we had him ranked as the 13th player in the class. He went 19th, signed for an actual bonus of $4.4 million. We viewed him as a $5.5 million talent just based on this formula. They also got positive value with Kaden Bodine, not nearly to the extent that these other two had. We actually had negative value with Slater DeBrun because he did sign for a pretty hefty bonus. He signed for $4 million. We viewed him as a $3.1 million value. But then you add on even more value after that with Joseph Jirwa at pick 58. He was also nearly $500,000 in excess.
We said there are we're making generalizations here. One of the ones that jumps out right here is we're doing a board from 1 to 500, 315 players for this. The negotiating leverage of different players is very different, more so than the talent is different for these players, right? So you take a guy like Slater DeBrun, and his negotiating leverage may be higher than a player who may be more talented, and that kind of factors into this as well, right?
Right. Yeah, I think there are just so many moving pieces here. That leverage component is a big one. Obviously, the players are not getting paid exactly in terms of how teams view the talent. It is the talent part of that. And also, do you come with leverage or not? How much are you able to push back in the negotiations given the leverage that you do have? And I also think, too, this year, it probably would make more sense if we had a more gradual sort of leveling off of the values for each player, because we did hear consistently throughout this draft cycle that it was hard to separate players in this class. So if I just like pull up some of these values we're talking through at the very top. So if I pull up our list of players, we have Ethan Holliday as basically valued as an $11 million player because that's the 1-1 slot value. He's number one overall on our board. And then you go down to Cade Anderson, fourth overall. He comes with an $8.7 million valuation. Now, would I look at you and say, okay, I think Ethan Holliday is worth nearly $2.5 million more dollars than Cade Anderson? No, I don't. So,
and we're saying that, well, 11 million is something that basically we're giving 1-1 pure full slot value, right, where there's basically been one player in the 2020s who you could make that argument for. He happens to be one of the two best pitchers in baseball less than a year and a half after he was drafted. So,
It's interesting too, because I do think that, like, clearly the industry didn't view any players in this class as being worth the top three slot value in the draft. But also, if this is a free market system, all the players in the top 15 first round would be worth way more than these slot values because they can negotiate with any team. So there are a lot of moving pieces here. I do wonder if using our BA grades and the formula we have for prospect valuation that we use to do our org talent rankings might be a better way to look at this, but I've kind of come back to just using the slot values that teams are operating with. It seems the most simple to me, but it does come with some of those. Like, I think the best way to look at this is don't get too caught up in like small differences. I think the best way to come away from this is what are the extremes. And if you look at like maybe the top value, top five team values on our board versus the bottom five team values, that probably will give you a better way to look at this class directionally, if that makes sense.
To give a very long ago example, though, of what these players could make if it wasn't for the bonus pools, there was 1996 where there were four first round pick who were declared free agents because their teams did not offer them a contract in the proper amount of time. Travis Lee got $10 million in 1996.
Right.
We're talking about Ethan Holiday having $11 million, you know, slot, you know, or the 1-1 pick having an $11 million slot. Now, when your business has an opening that you needed to fill yesterday, there's an easy answer to your problem. How do you find amazing candidates fast? Easy. Just use Indeed. When it comes to hiring, Indeed is all you need. Stop struggling to get your job posts seen on other job sites. Indeed sponsored jobs help you stand out and hire fast. With sponsored jobs, your posts jump to the top of the page for your relevant candidates so you can reach the people you want faster. And it makes a huge difference. According to Indeed data, sponsored jobs posted directly on Indeed have 45% more applications than non-sponsored jobs. For us, Indeed has made hiring easy time after time. We get great candidates who find us on Indeed, and we can do the entire hiring process all within Indeed. Plus, with Indeed sponsored jobs, there are no monthly subscriptions, no long-term contracts, and you only pay for results. How fast is Indeed? In the minute I've been talking to you, 23 hires were made on Indeed, according to Indeed data worldwide. There's no need to wait any longer. Speed up your hiring right now with Indeed, and listeners of this show will get a $75 sponsored job credit to get your jobs more visibility at Indeed.com/Baseball America. Just go to Indeed.com/Baseball America right now and support our show by saying that you heard about Indeed on this podcast. Indeed.com/Baseball America. Terms and conditions apply. Hiring? Indeed is all you need. Think of what the MLB salaries were in 1996 compared to what they are in 2025. Yes, these players would be getting massively more than this in just a true free market system. I will also note with that, this is a system that is collectively bargained between Major League Baseball and the Players Association. Essentially, the Players Association has long traded limiting draft bonuses to get more money to big leaguers. That's how it works.
Yeah. So really quickly, and you guys can get the full like list and see all of these numbers for every single team if you check out the piece at baseballamerica.com. But I think it'd be worth maybe just going over the best teams by total value, the worst teams, and then kind of the most efficient, least efficient. But we're kind of running through that total BA value list. So the teams that came away with what we view as the best draft hauls this year, it would be Baltimore at the top. Like I said earlier, almost $22 million of BA value. Then the Rockies with $19.6 million in BA value. The Nationals, who picked first overall this year with $18.4 million in total value. The Marlins at just over $18 million. The Mariners at $17.7 million. And then I'll also just lump in Boston. They're here sixth overall, $15.7 million. I think Boston is interesting for a reason we'll get back to in a bit. But then at the bottom, I think there are a lot of usual suspects, some teams you would expect at the bottom of our total value list. The Mets, the Yankees, the Astros are all bottom three. They were all picking lower in the first round. The Mets and the Yankees had their picks dropped. They had fewer picks to work with, so they had some of the smallest bonus pools in the class. So I think those all make sense to be at the bottom of this list. The Mets are at the very bottom, $3.2 million in total BA value. Then the Yankees at $4.2 million. The Astros at $7 million essentially. And then I think Detroit, the Tigers, coming in at fourth least value from our BA value at 7.4. They're one of the more interesting teams, kind of on the opposite end of the spectrum for Boston. So if we're toggling over now and looking at the difference in total BA value versus total bonus pool, this number is basically telling you how well did you do in the draft according to the BA board versus the expectations for your draft, given your bonus pool capital and your pick capital. And we've already mentioned the Athletics topping that board. The Rockies also come out quite well at 3.9. A lot of that has to do with the fact that they got Ethan Holiday, the number one player in the class, at the fourth overall pick. They had some other picks that we continue to like further down the board. Third, we have the Red Sox, which I think is one of the more interesting teams because they had a total bonus pool of $12.4 million. It was a very middle of the pack in terms of just bonus pool to work with. They're picking in the middle of the first round. We have them with $15.7 million in total BA value. That is the third best difference of all of these teams. The Braves and the Guardians also come out quite well in this sort of efficiency category. These are all the top five teams and kind of the most efficiently spending based on the BA board. At the very bottom of this list, you got the Tigers, who are the least efficient, $3.5 million less than we would have expected. Then the Angels, $3 million less. Royals, Mets, Rangers, all in the $2 million to $3 million less than we would have expected range. So I'm throwing a lot at you. JJ, what's most interesting to you?
So let's talk about the Tigers for a minute.
Yeah.
So the key things here, I would say that the really jump out of their first two picks, they took Jordan Yost, who we had rated in the 80s, I believe, as their first round pick. And by our reporting, they were not the only team who was considering him as a back of the first round player. So, you know, we're acknowledging again, we have some intellectual humility here, right? We're not saying, oh, the Tigers are idiots. Clearly they don't know what they're doing or anything like that. We're saying, here's our board as we had it from the reporting we had.
Right.
And here's what they did. And then Michael Oliveto. But the other thing I would say with both those players is both of those players were also tabbed as kind of fast rising guys leading into the draft. So let's, you know, talk a little bit about those. Like that, then the flip side of it is they had Nick Dumansil, who was probably one of the guys who was on the board the longest. And, you know, again, we'll also acknowledge there are always other things that we cannot get access to that sometimes can play a little bit of a role, both in negotiating, but also, and again, I'm not saying it's in Dumansil's case, but for instance, if a player has an injury or something like that, medicals are something that are often very difficult to, you know, to glean, things like that. But, you know, look at the Tigers and kind of what do you see there?
Yeah. So you mentioned Nick Dumansil. It's funny to look at the Tigers because Nick Dumansil was like the seventh best individual value of any signing in this year's class based on our board. He was in the eighth round for the Tigers. We had him ranked 53rd overall. He went 249th overall. We viewed that pick as more than $1.5 million in surplus value. But for the Tigers, it really is at the very top for them. All of their first three picks, really, Jordan Yost, Michael Oliveto, Malachi Witherspoon, were all just players that the Tigers took in spots that were a little bit more aggressive than where the BA board had it. Jordan Yost, we ranked as the 82nd player in the class. He went 24th overall, signed for a $3.24 million signing bonus. We viewed him as just under $1 million in BA value based on our board. Michael Oliveto, 34th overall pick, signs for $2.4 million. And excuse me, Jordan Yost signed for 3.2. I don't know if I said 2.4 or 3.2 for him. We had him ranked 117, viewed him as a $650,000 value. So with both those two picks, I think the BA board viewed those as like two of the worst values, two of the top three worst values. And again, like you were mentioning, we don't have perfect information here. I would never go out and say like, oh, this Jordan Yost pick is not good, because he was a split camp player. There were teams who viewed Yost as sort of Kellen Lindsay-ish, which is the range he's going in on the board now. Contact-oriented, doesn't have a lot of power now, is fast, chance to stick at shortstop. I know the teams who viewed Jordan Yost as like a definite shortstop and really bought into the idea that he would layer on some strength and add impact to his strong bat-to-ball skills, viewed him a lot more favorably than some of the teams who are more questionable about whether or not he would stick at shortstop, were kind of more questionable about the impact he would gain. And so there was a wide range of opinions in the industry. We tried to kind of like hit that needle in the middle of those extremes. And clearly the Tigers are one of the teams that are just most bullish. And I do think it is worth just reiterating, there have been players in the past that we were light on and teams just have better reads. Evan Carter is the example of this. So
it wasn't that teams, literally a team was much higher on than everyone else. And they were right.
Right.
So like, yeah, we're not saying this. This is not Mel Kiper Jr. saying, you know, all these teams are idiots. Shador Sanders should have gone off the board, you know, four rounds earlier or whatever. We're saying, here's our board. We're presenting the information and we'll see, you know, as the years go along. But it's not something where we're like, oh, Jordan Yost, we have no idea who that player is. Oh, they took him. No, it's like, he's a split camp guy. They see this. The other teams see something else.
Right. Yeah. So it'll be really interesting just to watch specifically Yost and Oliveto's development over the next few years. Cause I do think like what those players turn into will ultimately determine, like, was this a successful draft for the Tigers? Did they just nail once again, these sort of hitterish high school profiles that they've really gravitated towards in recent years? And maybe should Yost and Oliveto have been guys who were higher up on sort of boards like ours earlier in the process. So definitely a fun one to watch. And maybe the best way you could view this, if you want to throw in that humility that we have with the process, is which are the drafts that are most like by the books BA board and which are the most off the board. sort of draft classes. That might be the most, maybe a more accurate way of saying it. But yeah, what else you want to talk through? Individual values?
I was going to say, so let's look at some of the individual values. I would say the other ones that jump out at the top, like the Braves had a very interesting draft, I feel like, in ways. So Alex Lodis, who, you know, we had one of the best values in this, and then, but that, you know, that was the savings. They saved on multiple top of the draft guys and ended up spending more on their fourth round pick than they spent on their first round pick. So that always sets you up to be an interesting draft. But like, that was one that really jumps out. But I would say, like you mentioned the Rockies, it's not just Ethan Holliday. The Rockies, who I would say, if there are Rockies fans out there, they need some good news. Mm-hmm. Talk about the Rockies draft, if you would, for a little bit.
Yeah. So in addition to Ethan Holliday, the BA board really likes the Max Belou pick at 74th overall. Just kind of looking at their board here, they took Ethan Holliday, JB Middleton, Max Belou, Ethan Hedges. Most of their surplus value in this draft is coming from Ethan Holliday, which was more than $2 million in value, one of the best overall values in the class. I think it was the fourth best after Seth Hernandez with the Pirates, Alex Lodis with the Braves, Kyson Witherspoon with the Red Sox. Ethan Holliday checks in number four. Just again, because he had such a big valuation on him as the de facto, not the de facto, the 1-1 on our board. But the Max Belou pick was also a really, really valuable pick in our minds. He ranked as the 33rd overall prospect in the class. The Rockies got him 74th overall. I still don't really know how he kind of fell that far, signed for just $1.1 million. We viewed him as like a fringe first round pick. I thought for sure he was going to be gone in the comp range or early second round at the latest. And he doesn't even go and get, I think he got exactly slot value. So it's not like he was some overpaid college hitter in that range. Maybe he slid a little bit more because of the injury. Maybe he slid a little bit more because of the corner outfield profile. But both based on the BA board, which views this as a $1.7, $1.8 million value. And me personally, like I really like this pick quite a bit. You look down the board, there are also Tanner Thatch in the eighth round. Is another pick that the board likes quite a bit. So yeah, those are kind of the big ones to mention with the Rockies.
Okay. Before we wrap this up, I do want to put you on the spot for, like, because we said we have intellectual humility on this. But what is, if you were going to say like 5 years from now, I'll give you a second to prep on this. The pick that jumps out to you is like, that could really end up being a steal. And is there, you know, that another one that really does maybe leave you scratching your head? Are there a couple that jump out, or one at least on each side?
Yeah, the pick, this is the biggest layup for me, because I was saying it even in the lead up to the draft, is just based on the industry's hesitancy to take prep right-handed pitchers high in the draft. I kind of knew that Seth Hernandez, who ranked number two on our board, and so he came with a $10.2 million BA value. He was never going to get that in this draft, just given the dynamics of that. But like, he went sixth overall. He was the best individual value in the class based on our board, $3 million in value. That also shatters the best value from a year ago. I think JJ Weatherholt, which has actually looked pretty good in hindsight a year later as a great value for the Cardinals. JJ Weatherholt was just over $2 million in surplus value as the top value from the 2024 class. I do think Seth Hernandez has a chance to just be a really impressive steal in this year's class. I mean, we talked about it all spring. We look at Hunter Green, guys like Jackson Job. If the top of this class has some struggles offensive on the offensive side, I do think Seth Hernandez still has as much upside as anyone in this class. If he winds up being this front of the rotation pitcher that he has the tools to be, it's going to look like a phenomenal pick. And I think the Pirates in particular, they come out of this exercise looking pretty good. And it makes me wonder, like, they would have been like a top five team on our total value if they were able to sign Angel Cervantes, their second round pick, who they did not sign. So that's the pick that I come away liking the best. That's the pick that our board comes away liking the best. Yeah, go ahead.
I would just interject on that. And yes, we know that high school right-handers, prep right-handers are a risky demographic. We've talked about it a ton of times. But we'll also note with that, and the industry over the last 10 years has massively course corrected on that. Mm-hmm. And so the point that we keep trying to make here is that the only high school right-handers who are even considered nowadays as top 10 picks are the absolute creme de la creme. If you want to say Tyler Kolek was a bad pick as a top three pick, Tyler Kolek does not go in the first round in a modern, I would say in a draft nowadays, because that's how far the industry's gone along from where it was.
Yeah. Like Kolek would probably be treated like Kolek would probably be treated a lot more like what Jack Bauer was treated like this year, and he wasn't drafted. So I do think you're right. The pitchers who are going in that range have to clear so many hurdles and thresholds and have to check so many boxes. And then one player that I kind of want to pull out on the worst value tier is Tyler Bremner. And I'll pull this out to maybe push back against what the board is saying here. So we view this value as $1.7 million and less value than expected. The BA board gave him a $5.98 million valuation. He signed for a $7.6 million signing bonus, going second overall to the Angels. I think this is maybe a good way to illustrate that. Like, I would have liked Tyler Bremner second overall to the Angels. I would have liked Jamie Arnold second overall to the Angels. They went 10 picks apart, basically 9 picks apart. I don't think that their overall valuation, their overall talent is quite as large as sort of these assigned BA values indicates. It's very hard to separate these players. And so I'll just like point to him as a guy who, if you just purely look at the numbers, the BA board says it's not a great pick, but just knowing how the BA board gets put together and the actual separation of these players, that's a pick that I quite like. And I know the Angels come out of this as like a team that isn't spending very efficiently based on this. And a lot of that has to do with the Bremner pick, but I actually quite like how the Angels navigated this draft. They spread a lot of their money around. They got a lot of upside pitchers in the class. Like maybe there are some pitchers or some hitters I would have preferred they took in this class. Like I do think the Angels still tend to take these very relieverish college arms earlier than I personally would. But I quite like a lot of the arms they got in this class. And I do think that anyone really skeptical of the Tyler Bremner pick, I would just push back and say, I think he is an equivalent talent to any of the other college pitchers who were in that range, despite what you might look at our board and look at the rankings and say, hey, there's a 6-spot gap in the rankings. Well, I think that that numerical difference and the BA value difference there probably overstates the actual separation that I feel exists between those players.
There's a lot to chew on there. We have the link here in the description if you want to read the full story over at baseballamerica.com. But that is a look at some of the best and maybe some of the lesser values that were done that we saw from the 2025 MLB draft with Carlos Collazo and myself, JJ Cooper.